Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and greetings from Tennis Podcast Towers, where you find all three of us, myself, Catherine Whittaker, David Law and Matt Roberts and Billie Jean K9, all in the same room for the first time in how long?
7 months.
Is it really?
Since that very weird Indian Wells in October last year.
Which feels like a lifetime ago.
Yes, and yet I sort of associate us doing this more pre-pandemic. It feels like real old times, doesn't it? Except Billie Jean's here.
Billie Jean is here, emphasising that it is post-pandemic, because of course she was a cliche lockdown puppy purchase. Yes, Google Photos reminded me that a year ago today, Matt, we were meeting up at a cottage on the south coast and you were meeting Billie Jean for the very first time.
That's right.
And we were seeing one another for the first time in a year. So.
And I lost to your dad and your brother at tennis.
You did. You did.
I mean, imagine how I'd end up.
Matt had a sort of existential tennis crisis that day. Yeah. And we watched Roger Federer lose to Pablo Andujar.
Yes, that's right.
This feels like another life.
Yeah.
It does, actually.
Doesn't it? Federer was playing, but was also losing to Pablo Andujar. We come to you after 3.5 days of play. Well, actually, no, it started on Sunday, didn't it? So maybe 4.5 days of play from Rome. As we speak now, Maria Sakkari and Coco Gauff are doing battle. Most of the quarterfinals have been set, I think, in the women's draw, as it stands at the moment in out-of-date tennis news, or soon-to-be out-of-date tennis news. The quarterfinal lineup stands as thus. Iga Świątek against Bianca Andreescu.
Let's pause there.
Yes.
And now, yes, please.
Yeah. It'll be the first time that's happened. Now, I know most people listening to this will probably already know what's happened in it by the time they're listening. But can we preview it anyway?
Yeah, we can.
Because I feel like we're previewing the whole rivalry. We're not just previewing that match that will already have happened by the time you're listening to this, but we're previewing what that rivalry could look like.
Who's had the more
and
exciting
all of my
career
dreams
so far?
Potentially coming true. Oh, Świątek. They've both won one slam, so
you have to look at what else they've done.
Yeah.
Which player has excited you more?
Andreescu.
Andreescu.
I love them both. No player really excites me like Andreescu at
Check
the moment.
Check me out, David.
It's Andreescu and Alcaraz all the way. Yeah. That is not a slight on Świątek. I think I would pretty much say Andreescu over anyone.
I think Świątek's had the better career. I think, you know, she's world number one. She's on this incredible 25-match winning streak now. But in terms of excitement, sheer excitement, as you put it, it has to be Andreescu. I mean, even just a few matches into her comeback here, I'm sort of getting really excited about her again.
Why?
She's appointment viewing.
Yeah, and also I think she seems to be in a much better place. She said that the loss she took in Madrid when she lost to Jessica Pegula, she said that, you know, in the past couple of years, that would have really upset her and, you know, she'd have been thinking about it for days. Whereas this time it's just left her hungry. And I think that's what you want after a loss, isn't it? And she looked hungry today when she was playing Petra Martic. She played really well in that match on an outside court that you just sort of thought, why is Andreescu playing here? And I think of her as such a big stage player, and she's going to have that stage against Świątek.
And she finished that match over Martic before Świątek had finished hers against Victoria Azarenka, which was it was 6-4, 6-1, wasn't it? Or 6-2, but perfect example of scoreline not telling the story of the match. 79-minute first set, which
is longer than a lot of matches Świątek's played.
That's 8 minutes on average per game. Wow. In that first set, extraordinary. But sorry, just to finish what I was saying. So Andreescu was asked about, you know, both potential opponents in the next round, and she was asked particularly about Świątek, and she basically said, "I want that rivalry. I want to play her. I want to know what my game feels like against Iga Świątek," and I love that.
I get the sense that there's a group of them that feel like that. I think Osaka has pointed to...
Yeah, I'm in the group, David.
Wanting a rivalry. You know, but even amongst themselves, I love the fact that they've got a desire to face each other and for it to be a thing and for people to point to it and everybody to look forward to it. And I think it is one of the reasons I'm a little bit surprised that Ash Barty did retire when she did, because I thought she wanted that too. And I still think there's a chance she may come back to be part of it in the future because of that desire. But yeah, I think that they all have an equal want there. I think that that's what's getting them going. That's what gives them the buzz of being part of the sport, particularly after having had a couple of years of it. They've all made their marks. They've all won Grand Slams.
They've all managed to make those marks sort of independently of one another. They've been dancing around one another, haven't they? And it's time to dance together.
How good is Andreescu on clay from what you've seen?
Well, I didn't watch her against Martic today. I think Matt did. On paper, that looks to me like a really good win. Martic had won through qualifying, hadn't she?
Yeah, I think her game suits clay. You know, she's got so much variety. She plays with angles. She hits drop shots. These are all things that we seem to talk about more than ever during the clay court season. And Andreescu can do them all. Crucially, she likes it. Yeah, I think she sort of feels herself on clay. You know, I think she rates herself on clay.
You'd be surprised.
Which, you know, I think that's so important for Andreescu to play her best tennis. I must say, though, you know, I watched some of the match between Świątek and Azarenka as well, and it's kind of tough to imagine Świątek being pushed more than that, and yet she still won 6-4, 6-1. You know, that was a real battle.
How was she pushed? What happened? Because I didn't see that.
I mean, Azarenka was just bringing it from the start. All of Świątek's service games in that first set were so long. She was just pressurizing her. Like, I haven't seen Świątek put under pressure, just constant hitting from Azarenka. And I think Świątek was overplaying a bit. She was making more errors than you would usually associate with her. But, you know, Azarenka's a Grand Slam champion, like Andreescu. You know, she isn't just there to make up the numbers against Świątek. And I think, you know, I'm not saying that people are doing that, but I'm sure when a player gets on a streak like this, there's a bit of a sense of they've kind of won the match before they've even stepped on the court, and that wasn't the case against Azarenka at all. But gosh, I mean, that's, you know, it's a dominant scoreline, but it wasn't a dominant match for Świątek. She was really, really pushed against Azarenka. So I don't know how to see that, because she still ended up winning pretty comfortably in that second set, and yet it's hard to imagine her being pushed more. She's in such a dominant space at the moment, Świątek. Just, we talk about visualising what that match looks like between Świątek and Andreescu. I'm struggling to visualise what Świątek losing looks like at the moment. It's just, she's in such a rhythm.
Mm. Remember when there was that time when we'd never seen Andreescu lose a tennis match?
Like that.
Oh, this is amazing.
I mean, obviously we have seen Świątek lose, but it feels like a different... Well, I was going to say different era, but it actually is a different era, isn't it? Because, you know, it's pre-post Barty, isn't it? We will, in future years, look back at this as the the time after Ash Barty's shock retirement, and it's a different Iga Świątek since then, and that's so compelling. As you know, Matt put it beautifully on a recent previous pod, didn't he? That she's just, she hasn't just defaulted into the void. She has stepped into and filled the void.
And she's done it with a particular tactic, it seems to me, because thinking back 2 years to the period ahead of that French Open that she won, when tennis returned and it was all hard courts in America, and she was losing early in matches, and then she suddenly discovered herself during that French Open. But in this post-Barty period, she has stopped using variety for variety's sake. And that's something that I'm very interested to see what happens with Andreescu and with Ons Jabeur. And we saw it with Barty. I think she stopped using variety for its own sake. If I can hit a couple of different types of shot, I want to hit them just because I want to see what it's like. And I think some of these pros, even as good as they are a bit like that.
I think the more diverse and varied your game is, the longer it takes to figure it out. I think your experimental phase is longer. If you've got a really meat and potatoes game, if you're big serve, big forehand, that doesn't take much figuring out, does it? If you've only got one way you can win, you're probably going to be doing that from juniors right the way through your career, aren't you? If you've got far more at your disposal, you're going to play around with it before you really figure out what works. And there are examples, Denis Shapovalov, I'm looking at you, of players whose experimental phase feels like it's going on a touch too long.
And, well, Dimitrov, you might say, is still in it.
An experimental life.
At times I feel like he's had periods where he's realised big serve, big forehand movement, that's what I've got. But it hasn't lasted. Seems to me that Świątek now has cracked it. She's decided this is the winning formula for me. And nobody can live with it at the moment. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Andreescu tries, not only in this match, but in the rivalry generally. Let's say they play a series of matches this year. Imagine if they played each other on grass. Wow.
I'm struggling to imagine it on clay, let alone grass. Yeah, wow. But I think you're right. Świątek's spoken about that, hasn't she? About simplifying, working on strengths. And her forehand, she hits way more winners, I think, off that wing this year. She's just looking to end rallies quickly and have the variety as a kind of backup, I suppose, or use it in defence. But her plan A is, I'm imposing my game.
Sorry, you're staring at me, David, but I'm just thinking about Świątek Andreescu on grass.
Have we even seen Andreescu play on grass yet? Has she ever played
on grass? I certainly
haven't.
She would have played on grass when they sang Happy Birthday to her and after she'd lost.
Yes.
But that was Queen's Week and everything except Queen's exists in an alternative world.
She's deserving of a positive grass experience after that, I think. So Świątek Andreescu is our quarterfinal in the top section, the top quarter of the women's draw. The next one, Sabalenka against Anisimova. So no need to spend long talking about what's going to happen there. That's my favourite weird one-sided head-to-head in tennis at the moment. Sabalenka does not know what to do when she sees Amanda Anisimova down the other end of the
4-0.
Court.
4-0.
Yeah.
And I think three of those on play.
Yeah, and this will be their third meeting in 5 weeks. And they haven't been close, have they?
Why is that?
Who was that aimed at?
I think you're the expert on this, Matt, because you watched it up close in Australia.
I did, and that, to use a phrase from this podcast, took my breath away because that, I think that was the first time I'd ever seen an Anisimova play, certainly live.
Backhand porn.
It was the backhand.
He's doing his backhand face. He's going a bit weird.
But I tell you, they are kind of opposites in a way, because with Sabalenka, it's effortful, isn't it? You see the effort going into each and every shot, and it's like she has to produce the power, whereas with Anisimova, it's like it just somehow produces itself. As David tries not to crush Billie Jean.
She's just sort of...
She's got her little chin on David's shoulder.
She's just sort of giving me a bit of a cuddle behind my neck.
She does that, yeah. I mean, it's one of those where it's just... On one hand, you look at the head-to-head and think, well, surely, you know, Sabalenka's a good enough player that she's going to figure it out. But I don't know. I'm not sure she is. I mean, I think Anisimova's winning that.
I think the two weaknesses Anisimova probably has are...
Movement
and sort of grouped in with that, I suppose, defence.
Mm.
And maybe Sabalenka just doesn't make her hit enough shots to have to...
Can't expose
defend,
it.
Can't expose that. And it just becomes a bit of a shot-making battle. And, I mean, the cleanness with which Anisimova hits the ball is virtually unmatched, isn't it, when she's playing well. So,
and she can probably then use the pace.
Exactly.
She needed this run, though, Sabalenka. I mean, just reaching the quarterfinals is a good week for her. She's had a rough old time of it. Losing first round in Madrid as defending champion, she didn't need that. So moving on to the bottom half of the women's draw, we've got a quarterfinal that's yet to be set. It'll either be Goff or Sakkari. They're currently on court against Putintseva or Jabeur. Now, given that we've done lots of Jabeur chat, I'll just say, you know, great that she's backing up that Madrid win. And we'll move right on to talking about Yulia Putintseva, please.
This was the subject of much exchanges on WhatsApp last night, because I missed all the tennis yesterday, but Matt selectively filled me in with the most wondrous gifts.
She's been at her peak this week, or one of her peaks.
Describe, Matt.
Well, I love Putintseva, and her week started with an interview she gave to the WTA in which she described herself, and this is one of the great quotes, as a gangster on the court and an angel off the court. And then, as if on cue, she produces this match against Muguruza where she's losing, you know, quite easily. She's lost the first set quite straightforwardly. Muguruza, you know, who needs wins. And you're thinking, okay, is this going to be her time? And then there's a point at the start of the second set where Muguruza plays a drop shot. Putintseva gets up to it easily and hits it straight at Muguruza, tags her.
And it's not the only place she can put it in court. And it's probably not the best shot available either.
No, she's gone straight for the throat with that shot.
But, I mean, I do think that's fair game.
Yeah, I agree.
And I sort of think it's fair game for Muguruza to be annoyed about it. She stared at her and pointed at her. And then there was just this incredible tension for the rest of the match.
The point.
I've
never seen anybody point at somebody before like that.
And Muguruza then was in a position to win the match. She served for it. And then her game fell apart. You know, she really...
She's
could
got
barely
no
get
confidence,
the ball in the court.
She's so had
fragile.
An awful year.
She's got a losing record this year.
Mm. That is weird, isn't it? When you think of her.
The curse of doing well at the end of a season.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think she's probably had injuries, but even so, didn't expect this at all.
So then, when Putintseva ended up winning the match, as she did, I'm getting excited just thinking about this celebration.
He's doing his backhand face again.
Yes, I need a new face for a brush of the shoulder left-hand side, brush of the shoulder right-hand side, as she did, followed by big smile and strut to the net.
And cold, cold handshake.
Very cold handshake.
The most fleeting touch of hands that has ever happened. There was no clasping. It was just... It was a brush past. It was absolutely glorious. Putintseva holding her own at the moment against Ons Jabeur and seemed to be out of date tennis news. So, you'll know by the time you listen to this whether Putintseva marches on to ruffle further feathers. The bottom quarterfinal will be Jill Teichman, another one that's backed up a great week in Madrid. Very impressive. And she'll face either Paula Badosa or Daria Kazatkina. The one bloody week I didn't pick Badosa. She's been letting me down all season.
And you know who's picked her.
I do.
I spotted an opportunity.
You're like one of those lurkers at the slot machines in a casino, David.
Yeah, watch you fill it all up, then empty it. That's the idea.
I mean, she's only in the round of 16 at this stage, and you're I think of you as the appointed Daria Kazatkina cheerleader.
I mean, I'm not...
So maybe...
I did notice that you seem to try to claim Alcaraz points the other day in terms of credit.
Did I? When? Yeah. What do you mean?
Well, first of all, you said he'd win the French Open the other day on the podcast before I got a chance to remind everybody that I was the original forecaster.
But you asked me for a prediction.
Oh, yeah.
That's...
Anna,
so hang on.
And you also compared...
Your rule is nobody's ever allowed to predict Alcaraz to win things now, because you once predicted him to win a thing.
Not without a sort of...
Which he hasn't won yet.
Yeah.
Asterisk. By the way, David predicted it first.
Right.
But then
Do you
also...
remember when you predicted that the Pliskova sisters would face one another in Grand Slam finals?
I do. I've not seen Christina since.
She's about 8 months pregnant at the moment. Is she?
So oh dear. Maybe not then.
Sorry, I didn't want to have to bring that up, but I did feel backed into a corner.
Yeah.
There.
Well, it's going to get worse
because it's ringing.
I was also reminded of the quite awesome tweet about Oasis that you put out, which I really enjoyed. But then I thought, well, if you're watching Oasis in a pub in 1990, what's Matt?
You mean when I saw Alcaraz in 2017?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on thin
ground. Nice to bring that up.
You're on thin ground, David, pretending to be the original Alcaraz talent spotter when Matt Roberts is in the room. You were the ultimate early adopter, I think. Were you before or after Juan Carlos Ferrero?
Way before.
Were you?
He was with Zverev.
Wow.
Actually, no, I think that was pre him with Zverev, even.
That was magnificently awkward on court, wasn't it, with Zverev and Ferrero.
I actually had to look up the quotes that Ferrero gave
at the end.
He said that we have different views about what it is to be a professional. I mean, it's about as scathing as it gets.
And it's about, as it sums it up perfectly, I would say, in terms of what I've seen difference-wise. I mean, okay, you might look at the difference in talent between the two and physicality between the two, but from what I've seen so far, Alcaraz is a professional already. And I don't think Zverev isn't... I'm not saying he doesn't work hard. I think he does work hard, but he works hard when it suits him. And at his own pace and times and all the rest of it. And Ferrero couldn't be doing with the lateness, could he? He just couldn't handle that.
So that's the women's draw, unless anyone has anything further to add. Would we like a Danielle Collins moment?
Yes,
off you go, Matt.
We do need a Danielle Collins moment. This was just mere minutes after the Putintseva moments last night. We then got Danielle Collins... playing a really good match against Simona Halep to beat Halep late last night. And then I think got a little bit screwed over with the scheduling, to be honest, today, because she was on quite early today and didn't seem to be quite at it against Anisimova, but she played brilliantly against Halep. And this match included what is now one of my all-time favourite GIFs of Collins smoking a backhand winner across court and then blowing on her racket like it was a pistol that had just fired, and then in the background the camera got Simona Halep staring across the court back at Collins doing this, and it was just such a good energy. It's just perfect, Danielle Collins.
And massive win, PS.
So, yeah, really good. Probably her best win since the Australian Open. She kind of another one who needed a win.
And then trounced today by Anisimova.
Yeah, as I said, I really do think, you know, she didn't have long between those two matches.
That's something I've noticed.
She looked irritable.
The last 24 hours, that's felt like a theme with a number of these matches. I seem to be watching, this time yesterday, I was watching Tsitsipas Dimitrov in a 7-6 third set. And then by the time we got back to the apartment today, Tsitsipas had played again. Mm. You know, this morning, and it really is a tight turnaround for these players.
It's relentless, isn't it? He sits a bus, incidentally, moving on to the men's draw. He backed up that deciding set tiebreak win over Dimitrov with a win today over Karen Khachanov. When was the last time we talked about him?
We haven't spoken about him an awful lot, but I did reference him yesterday when I realised he'd been paid three times as much as every female winner in the same round, in the same tournament, as I was quietly fuming about it. Not quietly, actually.
It's a blight on my enjoyment of the tournament.
It's never bothered me this much, ever. And I mean, it's been the prize money differential at this tournament between men and women has been jarring for probably as long as I can remember. But I think I'm trying to work out what it is that's bothered me so much. I don't know whether it's
wider than ever. I just can't believe everyone's not talking about it.
No, I mean, there was a point yesterday where I realised that Marcus Giron, if he won his match to get to the quarterfinals, would be getting three times the amount of money that the winner of Świątek and Azarenka would be getting. And I think there's a number of things. One is that that they've rebranded the series of tournaments from on the WTA side from Premier Mandatories and Premier 5, which Rome would have been, which don't make any sense, never did really, and were always very confusing. So it was good that they did that. And they've called them WTA 1000, so in line with ATP 1000. So that's what we've got here at Rome. In Rome, players sharing the same courts, they're on the same ticket, there's nobody saying buy tickets for the men's tournament and the women's tournament, they're all in together, they're one ticket. And yet women are getting a third of the amount of prize money for the same match rounds as the men are. And I just can't believe that that's the case still, and that nobody's making anything of it. Nobody's making a fuss about this. As I was getting more and more worked up about it, I think what really brought it home to me was driving down here from Solihull. I had 2 hours to kill, and I started to think about how I'm going to tell my daughter about this, because she watches tennis with me a lot. She's 12 years old, and occasionally she'll see something that she thinks is unfair in terms of the scheduling, i.e. the women playing on the not playing on the centre court as much as the men or something like that. Things that we always talk about, but she notices them without me bringing them up. How am I going to tell her that if she one day became a tennis player and her brother, who's a couple of years younger, became a tennis player?
He would do it just to spite her, wouldn't he?
Yes. But if they played in the same tournament, he would be getting three times the amount of money that she would be getting just because she's a girl.
How can that be possible? Because the patriarchy.
Yeah, I mean, I put this out on Twitter and to whinge, and I'm going to carry on doing it, whinging, I am not going to stop. But the replies, I mean, lots of good, decent people who understand the point I'm making, and then some people who just reveal their colours. They really do. And by the way, I did contact the WTA about it, because I was curious as to what they thought about it, the fact that this was the situation. Are they not outraged like I am? And I asked about the rebranding and the realignment, really, of the WTA Tour, and I was told the alignment of ATP and WTA in event, I don't even know this word, we've talked about it before,
nomenclature. Or nomenclature.
Okay, nomenclature. I'm sure there's a better
naming
word. Maybe I should do my own work before naming. Reading that out. Which took place at the beginning of 2021. So effectively the renaming that took place at the beginning of 2021 from ATP, from WTA Premier Fives and Mandatories to WTA 1000s was done to create consistency across professional tennis and simplicity for fans. Good. These revisions were not tied to specific ranking points or prize money. We will continue our efforts to close the prize money gap with the goal of achieving equal prize money at all of our combined events as we move forwards. I then asked, well, how is the prize money for an event like Rome determined? And I was told the WTA's annual prize money levels are set through the WTA's prize money formula. Don't really know what that means. As Rome is a non-mandatory event, it is not an equal prize money event, and its set level for 2022 is $2,828,000. I mean, personally, I would like to hear a bit more disappointment with the situation than that. I understand that they, you know, you can't do all of your negotiating loudly and abrasively. But
I'd also like to hear the whole of tennis being disappointed with that situation. Yes, the WTA should be up in arms, and I hope that that is a... Yes, Billie Jean.
Billie Jean's up in arms.
Is a diplomatic public position, and behind the scenes there is serious talk going on. But it's not just the WTA that should be furious about this. Everybody should be furious about this. Male tennis players should be furious about this. Of course they're not. I got to the point with your reply, the replies to your tweet about Marcus Giron, David. I got to the point where I actually managed to start finding them funny. It was that depressing. I feel like I should just do an Adam Buxton and read a few of them out just so people really understand the state of this. So David tweets, excellent tweet. Iga Świątek defeated Elena Gabriela Ruse 6-3, 6-love to reach the last 16 in Rome. Less than 2 hours earlier, same court, Rafael Nadal defeated John Isner 6-3, 6-1. To reach the last 16 in Rome. Świątek earned €23,000, Nadal earned €72,000. This is the situation throughout and it stinks. Follow-up tweet. Some replies here point to the popularity of Rafael Nadal and how many tickets he sells. Can't be sure how many tickets Marcus Giron sells, but if he wins tomorrow and reaches the quarters, he gets €136,000. Quarter-finalist Iga Świątek versus Victoria Azarenka, €46,000. We live on a planet where assorted replies to that include Horatio Nelson with more people buy tickets to watch men. Emma Raducanu is the only star currently in women's tennis. We also have 77th team leader, and it's no accident, is it, that these people are anonymous and not using their names on Twitter. People can want equal pay, but until the WTA generate the same revenue as the ATP, then it isn't happening. Would you expect all restaurants to pay their staff the same for similar jobs? And I really could go on, but I'll just finish on Renier Dugros, who says, ATP and WTA are different organisations. Surprised you're unaware of that. If you're in favour of equal play across the board, who is picking up the tab? Should ATP also pay for WTA because they have more money? Investigate before commenting. The internet, ladies and gentlemen.
How long ago
I shouldn't give them the oxygen, should I? But I mean, it's just...
How long ago...
It's embedded, it's so ingrained.
Yeah, that's it.
How long ago
it?
Was it that Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal tweeted about how tennis should be merged? The
Hashtag
ATP and WTA. Actually merge.
I think that was quite soon into the pandemic. That was, I would say, April 2020.
It was when we were all tweeting weird stuff.
So, but 2 years ago,
yeah.
The two most famous tennis players on the planet, male tennis players, were saying that the ATP and the WTA should merge. And here we are, 2 years later, in the same tournament, both playing best of three. You don't have to have all the five versus three sets analogies and all the rest of it. They're earning three times the amount. How are they not embarrassed by that?
I wish we were in Rome to ask the questions.
I'd love to ask
but
Roger
we are
Federer.
On my sofa with a dog asleep on your shoulder.
I'd love to ask Roger Federer. Mm. You've got twin girls and twin boys. Would you be happy if they played this tournament and the boys earned three times the amount?
What do you think he would say? Do you think he'd dodge it?
I don't know. I don't think he would actually. I think he would. I think he's a decent enough human being that if he was actually put on the spot like that, that he would say, "Yeah, that's not right."
And then would you say, so what are you going to do about it? You're a very powerful voice in the sport. Is it just up to the women to sort it out?
Yeah, maybe I would. I don't know what I'd say. I don't know what. I hope I would. But, you know, I don't want to
imaginary
the guy
press
on
conference
the spot.
Exchanges with, you know, non-active tennis players. A thread.
We have to get a media credential for the Laver Cup and ask it to him. Ask him there.
I'm sure he'd be delighted to get hard-hitting questions about equal prize money at his potential farewell exhibition event. We'd make ourselves very popular indeed, wouldn't we?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Do we have anything further to add on the desperately depressing topic of prize money? Or shall I get on to the players that will be receiving the handsome sums in Rome this week?
Do that.
Okay, well, I mentioned Tsitsipas. 7-6 in the third over Dimitrov for him in his opener. Shouldn't have been in a deciding set tiebreak in the first place. Served for it in the second set.
Yeah, it was a very weird match. A match that I feel like for an hour and 20 minutes I've seen several times before. Dimitrov looking an inferior version of the glorious single-handed, backhanded player with lots of style, athleticism and power. He's kind of the previous generation of what Tsitsipas is now. But then, I mean, fair play to Dimitrov. He dug in. He really dug in. I think the crowd really got on his side because they wanted the comeback. They wanted the match. And there's an affection to him. Generally, he's been around a while. And that really became a love-in between Dimitrov and the crowd yesterday. And I think it probably energised him. It gave him some inspiration. But also, Tsitsipas's game, his performance was weird. He lost all of his conviction. You know how convincing he is usually from the baseline. Trustworthy. You never feel like there's too much that's going to go wrong with that game on a clay court. And he lost all faith and comfort and security from the baseline. And it's quite funny watching these matches on these pretty dusty clay courts when it's hot. And that's what it was yesterday. Tsitsipas started to look the one who was dishevelled. out there, and he ended up coming to the net virtually all the time. That was how he was winning points. And fair play to him, he was two match points down, he saved them, and he turned it around and won. And who knows, that might ignite what we are talking about in 2 weeks' time, for all we know, as a really significant run at the French Open. But he was not convincing yesterday.
He's having a very similar clay court season to what he had last year. You know, he won Monte Carlo both years. Okay, last year he did, got to the final in Barcelona, didn't he? Whereas this year he got beaten by Alcaraz along the way. But then he matched his result in Madrid, and he's matched his result again in Rome. You know,
what did he, I can't remember what he did in Rome last year.
He lost to Djokovic, I think, in Rome, in a match that I think was played over a couple of days. It was a really good match. And yet I don't feel as convinced by him this year as I did last year. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just because of Alcaraz, and I'm sort of seeing it through that lens a bit. Whereas, you know, last year he was very clearly the third best outside of Nadal and Djokovic. And now the picture's not quite that clear for him because of Alcaraz. And he's having these little wobbles in matches, isn't he? He had a minor one today where he was playing Khachanov and he was level in the first set. His game just disappeared and he lost that set.
Is he playing too much? Is that part of the problem? I mean, you've just reeled them off. Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Madrid, Rome. He's playing everything.
Yeah, I don't know if that's too much, though. I mean, that's
a pretty standard clay court schedule. And it's not like he's reaching the final of all of these and playing, you know...
I think generally he plays too much.
I'm not sure that's the problem right now, but over the course of a 12-month or 11-month season,
I'm just wondering,
I think he does,
you know, we're already looking at Alcaraz making... I know he won the tournament, but he made a very... I know he cited an injury, but that felt to me like a strategic move.
Yeah, and I think if Tsitsipas had won Madrid, he might have pulled out of Rome.
I can't ever remember him pulling out of anything.
But it's different when you end... when you end on a win, isn't it?
Tsitsipas
ended on a really dodgy loss to Zverev, really. Really disappointing performance. You know, undoubtedly he needs more matches on top of that. He needs to play himself into some more form. And I can't really think of any of those events you've listed that he shouldn't have played. But I do think, on a wider point, he probably plays too much. I think he needs to sort out his coaching situation. I do.
More Thomas Enqvist?
Less dad. I don't think the issue is Thomas Enqvist or what he's doing or not doing. I think it's impossible for anybody to have an impact while his dad is still so involved. And obviously that's incredibly hard, and really it should be incumbent upon the parent to step aside rather than expecting the child to make that decision. But I do think it would be the best thing for his tennis. But look, he's through to the quarterfinals. He plays Jannik Sinner, who's having a good week. If I learned anything from the ATP finals in Turin, it's that Jannik Sinner is a different guy in front of the Spanish crowd, Italian crowd, rather, a far more compelling and animated tennis player.
He did manage to get himself booed yesterday.
Did he? What happened?
After he'd beaten Fanini, he wrote Forza Milan on the camera, and it was flashed up on the screen.
That's a stitch up from the organisers.
I think he sort of apologised to Fanini as well, because it was... I'm pretty sure Fanini isn't a Milan fan. It was almost like he was rubbing it in. But his tennis has been pretty good, I think. And I think Sinner Tsitsipas will be a great match. They've played before in Rome, and I think it'll be interesting how Tsitsipas copes if the crowd is really against him. Which
could get under his skin, couldn't it? Sinner needed this week. I think he's been patchy, hasn't he? You know, sacking his whole team, I still think, you know, was a question mark thing to do.
Surprising.
Still sort of eyes emoji on how that pans out for him.
He doesn't seem to have had many bad losses this season, but he's not had any massive wins either.
He lost sort of 1-2 to Felix Auger-Aliassime last week.
That was bad. But again, it's also, you know, it's not like he's losing to players he, you know, definitely should be beating.
No, true.
But he's also had a lot of wins from match point down. Like a lot. 4 or 5 times he's won this season from match point down, which, you know, suggests he's on the edge a bit. You know, if he loses 2 or 3 of those matches, we're maybe talking about a really patchy season for him.
The winner of that Sinner-Tsitsipas match faces the winner of the bottom quarterfinal between Christian Garin and Alexander Zverev. Zverev backing up the week in Madrid. Garin, I think, I'm not sure how current this stat is, but at some point very recently, Christian Garin was outside the world's top 100 in the race. He's been having a terrible time, has
Christian
Garin.
Waiting for the clay.
Yes, like Casper Ruud was, but that's not gone brilliantly for him. So yeah, Zverev at the bottom there of the draw. I've not seen any of his tennis this week. Beat Baez, beat de Minaur. That's a good quarterfinal draw for him, isn't it? Could have a rematch with Tsitsipas in the semi-finals. Casper Ruud, having just slagged off his clay court season, is into a quarter final. Hooray for Casper Ruud. It hasn't been a great clay court season. We've barely talked about him, have we? He's not been in the conversation.
Pretty underwhelming and disappointing. Yeah. I would imagine he would feel that because he came into this clay season with really high hopes. I mean, he's the guy who won 3 clay court tournaments in a row last summer, didn't he? And then he's had a good end to the year and he's looked the business at points earlier on this year. But yeah, he needs to get going. And this could be the week, though. This is the beauty of this clay court season to me, is that it's long enough that you can have a rough start and then one good week can flick it for you. And look, the raw materials are there, aren't they, with his game, I think, anyway.
I think before this week he'd won more matches on his Miami run than he'd won in the whole of the clay court season so far. He's probably overtaken that now with his couple of wins here. But he'd been having losses that you would never have expected from him. You know, it's not like he's been losing to Alcaraz or Nadal or Djokovic. He's been losing to players outside the top 20 that he would expect to beat. Curious one.
He faces the winner of the match that we are currently watching between Rafael Nadal and Denis Shapovalov, which I always find, what's the word? Not sure. But obviously, Shapovalov-Nadal, it was the big breakthrough for Shapovalov, wasn't it? And the lovely photos of Shapovalov as a kid, being a mascot for Rafael Nadal, and then
when you
growing
saw
up
that,
a few years later to
Catherine,
beat him.
You were at Andreescu levels of excitement over Denis Shapovalov.
I'm all about the young Canadians, apparently.
I mean, the he was so exciting.
I was all in.
I think you were there, weren't you?
I was there in
the year before.
I was there in Toronto the previous year. Yes, I was there. Yeah, and I'd been there in Toronto the previous year when he beat Nick Kyrgios, and that was mega.
Mm. He hasn't really done what we thought he would do back then. He's had a good career. I mean, he's done some good things, and he's around every week, winning most of the match you expect him to, but rarely winning the ones that would take him to another level.
Yeah, he's just felt static for me for a long time. It's not that he hasn't won a Grand Slam yet, necessarily. If he was where Zverev is or where Tsitsipas is, I wouldn't consider that, you know, a disappointment on my expectations. But he's not. I don't think he's anywhere close to that, really. He might have the odd result that matches them or exceeds them, you know, Australian Open this year, of course. But I don't feel like, big picture, he's moved any closer to winning a slam or reaching a final. And he feels like he's been the same player for a really, really long time. I'd have to go back and watch the footage on YouTube, but right now I couldn't hand on heart say he's a better player than when he beat Nadal in Montreal. I honestly couldn't.
That's what I always say. I may sound like a broken record on this, but you know, you put Medvedev 2017 up against current day Medvedev, and current day Medvedev wins hands down every time. Same with Zverev, same with Rublev even. I'm not convinced about Shapovalov that he would necessarily beat that first version of him that we saw come through. He is more consistent generally because his ranking's gone up. But
he's also got scar tissue that he didn't have then. He was fearless then.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that what he's lost in the fearlessness he's gained in tennis now.
And these meltdowns. I mean,
the last one, it was quite enjoyable.
It was enjoyable.
It was very enjoyable.
But he sometimes seems less mature now than he did then.
Yeah.
And I think that's the scar tissue. I think it's the losses. I think it's, you know, maybe a sense of panic that he's not quite where he thought he might be.
Is Nadal yet, by the way? Based on what I know, we saw him win yesterday 6-4, 6-1, or was it the day before? I can't remember who it was against now.
Against John Isner.
John Isner,
and
yeah.
As soon as that match ended, he turned to his coach and said, pista, pista, and asked them to book a practice court.
Oh, really?
Because he didn't feel like he'd hit enough shots, I suppose, against Isner. I think, you know, the rally length was really short.
That is a damning indictment.
Literally, he was walking to the net to shake Isner's hand while he put the request in. And then I was watching, I think, Dumanor, Tommy Paul on one of the outside courts, and it was a commentary-less feed. And I was watching this match, and I could hear Nadal grunting. And I thought, have I got Nadal on a different tab still playing his match against Isner? I was really confused for a moment. Then I realised, oh, no, that's Nadal practising. He's literally gone straight out to practice. So I think he still needs to find his top level. I don't think he's properly Nadal yet. But, you know, he would probably say, how much information can you gain playing Isner? Because it's such a... Okay, you could throw a Pelker in, but it's such a one-off match. You know, he's got to do certain things well, but not repeated ground strokes from the baseline. I'm getting flashbacks, by the way, from watching Nadal Shapovalov, because they played in Rome last year. It was an amazing match. Nadal won it 7-6 in the third, I think. And I watched that match on my phone in the car outside, because our house was being viewed by potential buyers, and it was at the time where more than two people weren't allowed in the house at any one time. And I said, yeah, but I really want to watch Shapovalov Nadal. Can I just stay in my room? And they were like, I was like, no, you have to leave. So I watched it in the car outside.
That's commitment,
isn't it?
That's the commitment that you get from Matt Roberts, ladies and gentlemen.
They ended up being the people that bought our house.
Oh, it was all worth it. Oh, I love that. Novak Djokovic has looked very good in Rome this week, I think.
He's looked convincing so far and happy out there.
He loves it, doesn't he? He loves it in Rome. He's loved there. Although I have to say, he got a very warm reception every match he played in Madrid last week. But they, you know, it's different level in Rome, isn't it? I saw Ben Rothenberg reporting today that he's been doing all of his press conferences in Italian, obviously English as well, but he starts in Italian with the local press. I think that goes a long way in Italy to winning them over. And I think it's genuine, you know, what's a Francophile, but an Italian, but an Italophile? Doesn't sound right, does it?
No point in looking at me, really, is
there? Any raison Italophile? Anyway.
One of them.
I think he genuinely does have a lot of love for Rome, and I think he's a fitness trainer, lives in Rome, or anyway, you know. It's a love affair, and it shows, because, you know, Djokovic fans don't, or a certain breed of Djokovic fan doesn't like to admit it, but he wants to be loved, doesn't he? And that's okay. We all want to be loved. I would love a load of Italians cheering for me. Great.
It's quite an interesting thought experiment to imagine Djokovic getting Rome levels of love for his whole career everywhere, you know, because it is, okay, it's not the tournament he's won the most, but it is his most consistent tournament, isn't it? He never loses early in Rome. I think he's reached the quarterfinals pretty much every year since he first played it in about 2007. he likes it, you know, and as well as he's done in his career when the crowd has been against him, and you know, we've talked a lot about sometimes it feels like he's used that, but just kind of imagine if he hadn't had to have all of that on him as well, and he'd just been riding a wave of crowd support.
He's used a lot of that for his wins.
I think
that,
he
that's
has
brought
but,
out the defiance in
but
him.
But he might he might not have needed to do all that if it had all
or
been
maybe
with him.
It's made him better.
Maybe. Maybe.
We'll never know.
Mm. But he has looked good this week. He really has.
Auger
Karatsev and Wawrinka, he's beaten.
Auger Aliassime next for him.
I'm interested because we've seen the best and worst of Auger Aliassime over the last couple of weeks. He was fabulous against Jannik Sinner last week, and he was just appalling against Alexander Zverev.
David wants those 2 hours of his life back.
I was excruciating. I
think because I was so looking forward to it, and it was just a terrible tennis match. What more is there to say? But look, he's had some wins this week, as Auger Aliassime. So I feel like he's still tracking in the right direction, because even though maybe the shots might have malfunctioned that night, I don't think it's going to stop him going for them tomorrow.
Mm. Mm. Well, he has to, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always interested, often confused, by Felix Auger-Aliassime at the moment. I really thought with the title and Australia, I didn't think, oh, he's going to win everything and win all the slams and be world number one, but I really thought it would start to be a sort of smooth upward trajectory, and it's not been a disaster, but it's been far bumpier than I thought it would be since then. So I still don't understand him as a tennis player necessarily. Billie Jean has just shifted to put more of her self on David.
It's lovely. She's lovely.
Just a word for Stan Wawrinka.
Yes, go for it. And maybe Dominic Thiem as well in the same breath.
Oh.
Oh.
that feels like a sadder word.
Oh, really?
Oh, God.
I thought Dominic Thiem was a little bit closer. It was Fanini, wasn't it?
Yeah. But he still just looks a shadow of the player. And I thought Murray's analysis from their match in Rome was from their match in Madrid was really interesting about, it seems to be the spin on the forehand that Thiem's not getting. So that if you hit the ball low to him, he's not really able to generate any pace. And I think Fanini did that to him as well. And seems to, maybe it's a case of trusting the wrist again. They had Laura Robson in commentary and she was talking a lot about that.
Yeah, and the guys last week in Madrid were talking about that. I think only time will tell. Mm. But they were saying, look, at this early stage of the comeback, it could very well be a mental thing.
Yeah.
And he just has to build up the trust in it. But they did have, I think they had Hawkeye data to demonstrate how much less spin he's generating on the forehand. Dominic Thiem's game was so optimized, wasn't it? It was, I don't know, just so physically optimized that a drop off of a few percent just feels
huge. If you take any kind of explosivity or explosiveness, I'm not sure what the word is, explosiveness, I think, out of Thiem, he's just so reduced as a tennis player.
Oh, okay. Say happier words about Stan Wawrinka.
Well, I mean, genuinely nice to see him playing tennis, you know, rather than tweeting about NFTs.
Is that the nicest thing we can find to
well,
say?
I'll co-sign
a backhanded compliment about NFTs.
Massive compliment, as far as I'm concerned.
But he's been great. I think he's been one of the best stories of the first few days of this tournament. Like, he was never going to win it, but it was just nice to see him, honestly, playing quite well. I thought he played really well to come back against Riley Opelka. You know, the backhand is still the backhand. And he was getting a lot of support as well. I think there's, you know, people know that he's been through a lot of injury trouble recently. And he's an exciting player. And people have got a lot of connections to Wawrinka because they've seen him be astonishingly good. And they have that image in their mind, I suppose. So great that he's back. And look, he said himself, I'm not ready to play Novak Djokovic. They ran that as the
build up.
As the hype interview beforehand. Turns out his analysis was spot on.
It was very Monfils before playing Djokovic, wasn't it?
Yes.
I'm just not as good a tennis player as he is. Great, thanks. Thanks for being the hype man on that one. Would anybody like to change? I can't remember what we all predicted, but is anybody's feelings about who's going to win this thing or things, men's and women's, changed since we last podcasted 4 days ago?
Well, I picked Tsitsipas in the newsletter. I'd have gone for Djokovic if Djokovic was available. I think Djokovic will win the tournament. I would.
You see what he's done there,
I
David?
I would back you there.
Yeah, he just sort of...
He's hedged.
Yeah, it's a backup.
And I would go with Świątek.
I'm sticking with Badosa. I'm comfortable.
Mm.
Particularly with Billie Jean on my neck.
Everything feels achievable with Billie Jean on your neck. Very quickly, because this is a sort of not quite news item. Very well might be a news item the next time we pod on Sunday or Monday to wrap up Rome. But news leaked yesterday that the ATP would soon be announcing that they would be, in response to Wimbledon banning Russian and Belarusian tennis players from competing at Wimbledon, and the LTA following suit and banning them from competing at all UK events. The news leaked yesterday that the ATP would soon be announcing that they will be withdrawing ranking points from Wimbledon and other summer UK events. And the understanding is, and again, totally unconfirmed at this stage, that the WTA would be making that same move and they would be hashtag Tennis United on this. Obviously, we'll react and dissect this more fully as and when it becomes reality. It's not hugely surprising to me, I don't think. It felt, you know, it was very clear from the reaction after Wimbledon made their announcement that the ATP and WTA weren't messing around on this.
What Steve Simon said to you here on the podcast, yeah. Because he was clear that we have to do something strong because we feel strongly about it.
Mm.
And there's not that much available to them to be strong with.
I mean, even this, I mean, does it harm Wimbledon?
It harms low-ranked players, doesn't it? I don't think it will...
But they don't want to be punishing the players.
Well, no.
That's the thing. It almost, to me, feels like it's hurting players, not Wimbledon.
What other lever can they pull?
I think it's more symbolic.
It's symbolic,
really.
Isn't it?
I think they have to make a stand. And what can they take away? They can take away ranking points. And effectively, it's in some quarters, call Wimbledon an exhibition as a result of taking away sanctioned ranking points.
Would you go that far? The Olympics isn't an exhibition.
I don't view it like that. I mean, Wimbledon is Wimbledon. It will make no difference to me personally in terms of the importance with which I regard the Wimbledon victory, for instance. It makes no difference to me. But I think it's significant in terms of the relationship between the two. It's a heck of a standoff, this, really. And I think it could be more damaging to the LTA in terms of the player representation they get at those events that they have also banned Russian and Belarusian players. I mean, certainly Queens was not going to get Medvedev and Rublev anyway. They'd already signed up to play in Halle. As had most of the top players this year. There are some notable players that are due to play Queens that have already been announced. Berrettini, Alcaraz have already been announced. But maybe...
Murray.
Yes, there is a report in the Daily Mail today that maybe Murray might even reconsider that based on those ranking points. I'd be surprised at that.
He does need ranking points, doesn't he, at the moment?
You know,
he wants to stop having to ask for wildcards.
It certainly would damage them in terms of picking up players that see Wimbledon as a rank, see Queens and those other tournaments in Great Britain as ranking points opportunities if there are those available elsewhere.
And I'm not, as you said, I'm not sure what other options were available to them. I did wonder, and maybe they will come up with some sort of ranking point freeze or something from last year, so that players' points are kept
equally,
on.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's all quite complicated. But it does feel like it's hurting the British sort of summer warm-up grass court tournaments and the players, to be honest, more than Wimbledon. Because as you said, still got the prestige, it's still got the prize money, still Wimbledon.
Well, look, we'll get into it more as and when it becomes reality. We think that is likely to be before we next record a podcast, but who knows? I'm sure there are high-level discussions behind the scenes, shall we say. We'll be recording again on Monday morning, I think, so obviously we'll be covering the two Rome finals and the doubles finals as well. We'll be looking ahead to Roland Garros, to Daniil Medvedev's comeback in Geneva next week. There's still the possibility that Daniil Medvedev will be number one on Monday. Find out on the next tennis podcast. We'll let you know. And of course, all three of us will be travelling to Paris on the Eurostar on Thursday. Billie Jean, close your ears. You're not involved in this plan. As much as I would love you to be.
You're not invited.
No, I'll be cheating on you with Coco for the fortnight. And yeah, we'll be bringing you non-stop podcasts from Tennis Podcast Towers Francais. And we can't wait for it. We really can't. We have our mascots. We have Darwin Carter and Gerald the cat, who is dearly missed. And our thoughts are with Gerald's family.
Right, Darwin.
We were having a moment for Gerald there, David.
Sorry, Gerald.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our executive producers, Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner. They are top blokes. And we have our weekly mascot. Two of them. Oh, my goodness. Hang on a second. Hang on. We have Ted, who was our mascot on Monday, of course. We love Ted. We now have Estrella.
Indeed.
Estrella's amazing.
Is Estrella named after the beer?
Maybe the beer's named after Estrella.
Estrella is an English pointer. Oh, does it? So, right, okay, right, got you. Estrella is an English pointer, a rescue dog from Spain. She gets called Stray for short by owner Carol. Carol says that Estrella is a loving, cuddly and calm soul, except when she sees wild birds. Well, that's relatable. Well, Estrella's lovely. I'm looking at side by side pictures of Ted and Estrella from our newsletter, and they're very different animals. Very, very different animals, but much love for both. Gotta say, Ted looks happier about being a mascot. But there's definitely a regal dignity to Estrella. So thank you very much, Carol, and thank you to Estrella for being our mascot. We have shout outs, Matt.
Yes, we do. We have Pamela Kennedy in Edinburgh.
Oh, lovely Edinburgh.
Right, Pamela.
Hello, Pamela. I once covered a Champions Tour event in Edinburgh where they made a roof for the court that wasn't big enough.
Wasn't fit, and it fit rained. For purpose. It came in from the sides and drenched the court.
It was an absolute catastrophe.
But we love Edinburgh otherwise, Pamela.
Yeah, great city.
We also have Jennifer Whelan from Aberdeenshire.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer. And is this a Scottish-themed shout-out episode?
Just the way they've fallen.
Just the way they've fallen. Hello, Jennifer. Jennifer, you've made me think briefly of Jennifer Brady and the fact that where is Jennifer Brady?
Jennifer. Yeah, what happened to her? Injured.
Yeah, tough times. Anyway, thank you, Jennifer, for your support.
And we have Avrilina Medea, I don't know if that's pronouncing it properly, from Cyprus.
That's like Avril Lavigne's name sort of all amalgamated.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Avrilina.
Avrilina.
That's wonderful.
We've never had a tennis player called Avrilina, have we?
No.
I've never come across that name.
I've been
to Cyprus. I like
that's
Cyprus.
That's a wonderful name.
Avrilina says the pod has turned her from a casual tennis fan into a diehard.
Oh,
I feel very nice? Proud.
That's great.
Very touched.
Avrilina, thank you ever so much for your support and hello. If you would like a shout out, you can get a shout out. Become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. Link is in our show notes. That will also get you our bonus episodes available only to friends of the pod. And next week, that means two, not one, folks, but two episodes of Roland Garros Relived. When will we do the unveil?
Already done it, Catherine. Yeah. In our newsletter, but now we get to do it on the podcast.
But I don't get the newsletter
because
there's a glitch. It only applies to me, folks. Everybody else is getting it. I'm on the mailing list, but it doesn't arrive.
For your benefit, Catherine, it's about Mats Wilander in 1982 when he was, a 17-year-old following in the footsteps of a very famous compatriot who dominated the French Open for several years. Where does that sound familiar?
I feel like I'm talking to a different person than I was 30 seconds ago. Anyway, what's the other one, David? Tell the listeners.
The Amélie Mauresmo story.
The Amélie Mauresmo story. So those two episodes will be recorded and uploaded and brought to Friends of the Tennis Podcast next week. There'll also be a Roland Garros review show recorded after the madness is all done and dusted. Looking back on the tournament as a whole, that'll be available for Friends of the Pod in,
June.
2.5 weeks' time. No, 3.5 weeks' time.
Yeah.
In a short amount of time. So become a friend of the pod, in short, and we will speak to you on Monday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.